goodbyes to Bagra and Misha. After her dire warning, I was hardly surprised that Bagra waved me off with a scowl. But I'd really come to see Misha. I reassured him that I had found someone to continue his lessons while we were gone, and I gifted him with one of the golden sunburst pins worn by my personal guard. Mal wouldn't be able to wear it in the South, and the delight on Misha's face was worth all of Bagra's sneering. I took my time wending my way back through the dark passages. It was quiet down here, and I'd barely had a moment to think since Bagra had told me her story. I knew she'd intended it as a cautionary tale, and yet my thoughts kept returning to the little girl who'd been thrown into the river with Ilya Morozova. Bagra thought she'd died. She'd dismissed her sister as Otkazatsya. But what if she simply hadn't shown her power yet? She was Morozova's child, too. What if her gift was unique, like Bagra's? If she had survived, her father might have taken her with him in pursuit of the Firebird. She might have lived near the Sikorzoi, her power passed down from generation to generation over hundreds of years. It might have finally shown itself in me. It was presumption, I knew, terrible arrogance, and yet, if we found the Firebird near Dvastolba, so close to the place of my birth, could it really be coincidence? I stopped short. If I was related to Morozova, that meant I was related to the Darkling. And that meant I'd almost... The thought made my skin crawl. No matter how many years and generations might have passed, I still felt like I needed a scalding bath. My thoughts were interrupted by Nikolai striding down the hall toward me.
"There's something you should see," he said.
"Is everything all right?"
"Rather spectacular, actually," he peered at me. "What did the hag do to you? You look like you ate a particularly slimy bug."
Or possibly exchanged kisses and a bit more than that with my cousin. I shuddered. Nikolai offered me his arm.
"Well, whatever it is, you'll have to cringe about it later. There's a miracle upstairs, and it won't wait."
I looped my arm through his. "Never one to oversell it, are you, Lantsov?"
"It's not overselling, if you deliver."
We'd just started up the stairs when Mal came bounding down in the opposite direction. He was beaming, his face alight with excitement. That smile was like a bomb going off in my chest. It belonged to a Mal I thought had disappeared beneath the scars of this war. He caught sight of me and Nikolai, arms entwined. It took the briefest second for his face to shudder. He bowed and stepped aside for us to pass.
"Headed the wrong way," said Nikolai. "You're going to miss it." "Be up in a minute," Mal replied.
His voice sounded so normal, so pleasant, I almost believed I'd imagined that smile. Still, it took everything in me to keep climbing those stairs, to keep my hand on Nikolai's arm. "Despise your heart," I told myself. "Do what needs to be done." When we reached the top of the stairs and entered the spinning wheel, my jaw dropped. The lanterns had been extinguished so that the room was dark, but all around us stars were falling. The windows were lit with streaks of light cascading over the mountaintop like bright fish in a river.
"Meteor shower,"
said Nikolai as he led me carefully through the room. People had laid blankets and pillows on the heated floor and were sitting in clusters or lying on their backs, watching the night sky. All at once, the pain in my chest was so bad it nearly bent me double, because this was what Mal had been coming to show me. Because that look, that open, eager, happy look, had been for me. Because I would always be the first person he turned to when he saw something lovely, and I would do the same. Whether I was a saint or a queen or the most powerful Grisha who ever lived, I would always turn to him. "Beautiful," I managed.
"I told you I had a lot of money."
"So you arrange celestial events now?"
as a sideline.
We stood at the center of the room, gazing up at the glass dome.
I could promise to make you forget him, Nikolai offered.
I'm not sure that's possible.
You do realize you're playing havoc with my pride.
Your confidence seems perfectly intact.
Think about it, he said,
leading me through the crowd to a quiet nook near the western terrace.
I'm used to being the center of attention wherever I go. I've been told I could charm the shoes off a racehorse mid-stride, and yet you seem impervious.
I laughed. You know damn well I like you, Nikolai.
Such a tepid sentiment.
I don't hear you making declarations of love.
Would they help?
No.
Flattery? Flowers? 100 head of cattle?
I gave him a shove. No. Even now I knew that bringing me up here was less a romantic gesture than it was a display. The mess hall was deserted, and we had this little pocket of the spinning wheel to ourselves, but he'd made sure we'd taken the long way through the crowd. He wanted us to be seen together, the future king and queen of Ravka. Nikolai cleared his throat.
Elena, on the very slim chance that we survive the next few weeks, I'm going to ask you to be my wife.
My mouth went dry. I'd known this was where we were headed, but it was still strange to hear him say those words.
Even if Mal wants to stay on, Nikolai continued, I'm going to have him reassigned.
Say goodnight. Tell me to leave, Alina. I understand, I said quietly.
Do you? I know I said that we could have a marriage in name only, but If we had a child, I wouldn't want him to have to endure the rumors and the jokes.
He clasped his hands behind his back.
One royal bastard is enough.
Children, with Nikolai, you don't have to do this, you know, I said. I wasn't sure if I was talking to him or myself. I could lead the Second Army and you could have pretty much any girl you want.
A shoe princess, a Kirch banker's daughter.
Or a Ravkin heiress, or a Grisha like Zoya.
Zoya? I make it a policy never to seduce anyone prettier than I am.
I laughed. I think that was an insult.
Alina, this is the alliance I want, the First and Second Armies brought together. As for the rest, I've always known that whatever marriage I made would be political. It would be about power, not love. But we might get lucky. In time, we might have both.
Or the third amplifier will turn me into a power-mad dictator, and you'll have to kill me.
Yes, that would make for an awkward honeymoon.
He took my hand, circling my bare wrist with his fingers. I tensed and realized I was waiting for the rush of surety that came with the Darkling's touch. Or a jolt like the one I'd felt that night at the little palace when Mal and I had argued by the Banya. Nothing happened. Nikolai's skin was warm, his grip gentle. I'd wondered if I would ever feel something so simple again, or if the power in me would just keep jumping and crackling, seeking connection the way lightning seeks high ground.
Collar,
Nikolai said.
Fetters. I won't have to spend much on jewelry.
I have expensive taste in tiaras.
But only one head.
Thus far, I glanced down at my wrist. I should warn you, based on the conversation I had today with Bagra, if things do go wrong with the amplifiers, getting rid of me may require more than your usual firepower.
Like what?
Possibly another sun summoner. It's simple enough. Like calls to like.
I'm sure there's a spare around somewhere.
I couldn't help but smile.
See, he said. If we're not dead in a month, we might be very happy together.
Stop that, I said, still grinning.
What?
Saying the right thing.
I'll try to wean myself of the habit.
His smile faltered. He reached out and brushed the hair back from my face. I froze. He rested his hand in the space where the collar met the curve of my neck, and when I didn't bolt, he slid his palm up to cut my cheek. I wasn't sure I wanted this. You said you wouldn't kiss me until...
Until you were thinking of me instead of trying to forget him.
He moved closer, the light from the meteor shower passing over his features. He leaned in, giving me time to pull away. I could feel his breath when he said,
I love it when you quote me.
He brushed his lips over mine once, briefly, then again. It was less a kiss than the promise of one.
When you're ready, he said.
Then he tucked my hand in his arm and we stood together, watching the spill of stars streaking the sky. We might be happy in time. People fell in love every day. Jenya and David, Tamar and Nadia. But were they happy? Would they stay that way? Maybe love was superstition, a prayer we said to keep the truth of loneliness at bay. I tilted my head back. The stars looked like they were close together, when really they were millions of miles apart. In the end, maybe love just meant longing for something impossibly bright and forever out of reach. Chapter 11 The next morning I found Nikolai on the eastern terrace taking weather readings. Mal's team was set to depart within the hour and was only waiting for the all clear. I pulled up my hood. It wasn't quite snowing, but a few flakes had settled on my cheeks and hair. How does everything look? I asked, handing Nikolai a glass of tea.
Not bad, he replied. Gusts are mild and the pressure's holding steady. They may have it rough through the mountains, but it shouldn't be anything the Bittern can't handle.
I heard the door open behind me and Mal and Tamar stepped out onto the terrace. They were dressed in peasant clothes, fur hats, and sturdy wool coats.
Are we a go?
Tamar asked. She was trying to seem calm, but I could hear the barely leashed excitement in her voice. Behind her, I saw Nadia, with her face pressed against the glass, awaiting the verdict. Nikolai nodded.
You're a go.
Tamar's grin was blinding. She managed a restrained bow, then turned to Nadia and gave her the signal. Nadia whooped and broke into something between a seizure and a dance. Nikolai laughed.
If only she'd show a little enthusiasm.
Be safe, I said, as I embraced Tamar.
Take care of Tolia for me, she replied.
Then she whispered.
We left the cobalt lace in your trunk. Wear that tonight.
I rolled my eyes and gave her a shove. I knew I would see them all in a week, but I was surprised at how much I was going to miss them. There was an awkward pause as I faced Mal. His blue eyes were vibrant in the gray morning light. The scar at my shoulder twinged.
Safe journey, moi sovereigni,
he bowed. I knew what was expected, but I hugged him anyway. For a moment he just stood there, then his arms closed hard around me.
Safe journey, Alina,
he whispered into my hair, and quickly stepped back.
We'll be on our way as soon as the Kingfisher returns. I expect to see you all safe and whole in 1 week's time,
Nikolai said,
and packing some all-powerful bird bones.
Mal bowed.
Saint speed, moi Tsarevich.
Nikolai offered his hand and they shook.
Good luck, Aretsev. Find the firebird and when this is over, I'll see you well rewarded. A farmhouse in Udova, a dasha near the city, whatever you want. I don't need any of that. Just...
He dropped Nikolai's hand and looked away.
Deserve her.
He hastened back into the spinning wheel with Tamar behind him. Through the glass, I saw them talking to Nadia and Harshaw.
Well, said Nikolai, at least he's learned to make an exit.
I ignored the ache in my throat and said, How long will it take us to reach Ketterdam?
2 to 3 days, depending on the weather and our squallers. We'll go north, then over the True Sea. It's safer than traveling over Rovka.
What's it like?
Ketterdam? It's...
He never finished his sentence. A shadowed blur cut across my vision, and Nikolai was gone. I stood staring at the place where he'd been, then screamed as I felt claws close over my shoulders and my feet lifted from the floor. I glimpsed Mal bursting through the door to the terrace, Tamar on his heels. He lunged across the distance and seized me around the waist, yanking me back down. I twisted, arms moving in an arc, sending a blaze of light burning through the Nichevoya that had hold of me. It wavered and exploded into nothing. I fell to the terrace in a heap, toppling with Mal, bleeding from where the monster's talons had pierced my skin. I was on my feet in seconds, horrified by what I saw. The air was full of darting black shapes, winged monsters that moved unlike any natural creature. Behind me I heard chaos erupting in the hall, the smash of breaking glass as Nichevoya hurled themselves against the windows. "Get the others out!" I yelled to Tamar. "Get them away from here! We can't leave you! I won't lose them, too!" "Go!" Mal bellowed at her. He shouldered his rifle, taking aim at the attacking monsters. I lashed out with a cut, but they were moving so quickly that I couldn't target them. I craned my neck, searching the sky for Nikolai. My heart was pounding. Where was the Darkling? If his monsters were here, then he must be nearby. He came from above. His creatures moved around him like a living cloak, their wings beating the air in a rippling black wave, forming and reforming, bearing him aloft, their bodies slipping apart and together, absorbing the bullets from Mal's gun.
"Saints," Mal swore. "How did he find us?"
The answer came quickly. I saw a red shape suspended between two Nichevoya, their black claws sunk deeply into their captive's body. Sergei's face was chalky, his eyes wide and terrified, his lips moving in a silent prayer.
"Shall I spare him, Alina?" said the Darkling.
"Leave him alone!"
"He betrayed you to the first oprichnik he could find. I wonder, will you offer him mercy? Or justice?"
"I don't want him harmed," I shouted. My mind was reeling. Had Sergei really betrayed us? He'd been on edge since the battle at the Little Palace, but what if he'd been planning this all along? Maybe he'd just been trying to slip away during our fight with the militia. Maybe he'd let Jenya's name drop deliberately. He'd been so ready to leave the spinning wheel. That was when I realized what Sergei was muttering. Not prayers, just one word over and over again. "Safe, safe, safe."
"Give him to me," I said.
"He betrayed me first, Alina.
He remained in Os-Alta when he should have come to my side. He sat on your council, plotted against me. He told me everything."
Thank the saints we'd kept the location of the Firebird a secret.
"So,"
said the Darkling,
"the decision is mine, and I'm afraid that I choose justice."
In one movement, Nichevoya ripped Sergei's limbs from his body and severed his head from his neck. I had the briefest glimpse of the shock on his face. His mouth open in a silent scream, then the pieces disappeared beneath the cloud bank.
"All saints,"
Mal swore. I gagged, but I had to shove down my terror. Mal and I turned in a slow circle, back to back. We were surrounded by Nichevoya. Behind me I could hear the sounds of screams and glass shattering in the spinning wheel.
"Here we are again, Alina. Your army against mine. Do you think your soldiers will fare any better this time?"
I ignored him and shouted into the misty grayness. "Nikolai!"
"Ah, the pirate prince. I have regretted many of the things I've had to do in this war," said the Darkling. "This is not one of them."
A shadow soldier swooped down. In horror, I saw it held Nikolai struggling in its arms. Any bit of courage I had evaporated.
I couldn't see Nikolai ripped limb from limb. Please! The word tore from me, without dignity or constraint. Please don't! The Darkling raised his hand. I clasped my fingers over my mouth, my legs already buckling. But the Nichevoya didn't attack Nikolai. It tossed him onto the terrace. His body hit the stone with a sickening thud and rolled to a stop. Alina, don't! Mal tried to hold me back, but I broke free of him and ran to where Nikolai lay, falling to my knees beside him. He moaned. His coat was torn where the creature's claws had shredded the fabric. He tried to push himself up on his elbows and blood dribbled from his mouth.
This was unexpected, he said weakly.
You're okay, I said. It's okay.
I appreciate your optimism.
I caught movement from the corner of my eye and saw two blots of shadow slip free of the Darkling's hands. They slithered over the lip of the balcony, undulating like serpents, heading directly toward us. I raised my hands and slashed out with a cut, obliterating one side of the terrace, but I was too slow. The shadow slithered lightning fast across the stone and darted into Nikolai's mouth. His eyes widened, his breath hitched in surprise, drawing whatever the Darkling had released into his lungs. We stared at each other in shock.
What? What was that?
He choked.
He
coughed, shuddered. Then his fingers flew to his chest, tearing open the remains of his shirt. We both looked down, and I saw shadow spreading beneath his skin in fragile black lines, splintering like veins in marble.
No,
I groaned.
No, no!
The cracks traveled across his stomach, down his arms.
Alina,
he said helplessly. The darkness fractured beneath his skin, climbing his throat. He threw his head back and screamed, the tendons flexing in his neck as his whole body contorted, his back bowing. He shoved up to his knees, chest heaving. I reached for him as he convulsed. He released another raw scream, and two black shards burst from his back. They unfurled like wings. His head shot up. He looked at me, face beaded in sweat, gaze panicked and desperate.
Alina!
Then his eyes, his clever, hazel eyes, went black.
Nikolai,
I whispered. His lips curled back, revealing teeth of black onyx. They had formed fangs. He snarled. I stumbled backward. His jaws snapped closed a bare inch from me.
Hungry?
The Darkling asked.
I wonder which of your friends you'll eat first.
I raised my hands, reluctant to use my power. I didn't want to hurt him.
Nikolai,
I begged.
Don't do this. Stay with me.
His face spasmed in pain. He was in there, fighting himself, battling the appetite that had taken hold of him. His hands flexed. No, his claws. He howled, and the noise that came from him was desperate, shrieking, completely inhuman. His wings beat the air as he rose from the terrace, monstrous, but still beautiful, still somehow Nikolai. He looked down at the dark veins coursing over his torso, at the razor-sharp talons that had pushed from his blackened fingertips. He held out his hands as if pleading with me for an answer.
Nikolai!
I cried. He turned in the air, wrenching himself away, and raced upward as if he could somehow outpace the need inside him, his black wings carrying him higher as he cut through the Nichevoya. He looked back once. And even from a distance, I felt his anguish and confusion. Then he was gone, a black speck in the gray sky, while I remained trembling below.
Eventually, said the Darkling, he will feed.
I'd warned Nikolai of the Darkling's vengeance, but even I couldn't have foreseen the elegance of this, the perfect cruelty.
Nikolai had made a fool of the Darkling, and now the Darkling had taken my polished, brilliant, noble prince and made him into a monster. Death would have been too kind. A sound came from me, something guttural, animal, a noise I didn't recognize. I raised my hands and brought the cut blazing down in two furious arcs. They struck the whirring shapes that surrounded the Darkling, and I saw some burst apart into nothing, only to have others take their place. I didn't care. I struck him again and again. If I could knock the top off a mountain, surely my power was good for something in this battle. "Fight me!" I screamed. "Let's end this now! Here!"
"Fight you, Alina. There is no fight to be had."
He gestured to the Nichevoya.
"Seize them."
They swarmed down from every direction, a seething black mass. Beside me, Mal opened fire. I could smell gunpowder and hear the clink of empty cartridges as bullets hit the ground. I was focusing every bit of power I had, nearly pinwheeling my arms, cutting through 5, 10, 15 shadow soldiers at a time, but it was no good. There were simply too many of them. Then suddenly they stopped. The Nichevoya hung in the air, bodies limp, wings moving in silent rhythm.
"Did you do that?" Mal asked.
I don't think so. Silence descended on the terrace. I could hear the wail of the wind, the sounds of the battle raging behind us.
"Abomination!"
We turned. Bagra stood inside the doorway, her hand on Misha's shoulder. The boy was shaking, his eyes so wide I could see more white than iris. Behind them, our soldiers were fighting not just Nichevoya but Oprichniki, and the Darkling's own Grisha in their blue and red kefta. He had his creatures bring them all to the mountaintop.
"Guide me," Bagra told Misha.
What courage it must have taken for him to lead her out onto the terrace, past the Nichevoya, who shifted and bumped up against each other, following her passage like a field of glistening black reeds. Only those closest to the Darkling remained moving, clinging to their master, their wings beating in unison. The Darkling's face was livid.
"I should have known I'd find you cloistered with the enemy. Go back inside," he ordered. "My soldiers will not harm you."
Bagra ignored him. When they reached the end of the terrace, Misha placed her hand on the lip of the remaining wall. She leaned against it, releasing an almost contented sigh, and gave Misha a nudge with her stick.
"Go on, boy. Run to the scrawny little saint."
He hesitated. Bagra reached out and found his cheek, then patted it none too gently.
"Go on," she repeated. "I want to talk to my son."
"Misha,"
Mal said. And the boy bolted over to us, ducking behind Mal's coat. The Nichevoya showed no interest in him, their attention focused wholly on Bagra.
"What is it you want?"
asked the Darkling.
"And do not hope to plead for mercy for these fools."
"Only to meet your monsters," she said.
Bagra leaned her stick against the wall and held out her arms. The Nichevoya moved forward, rustling and nudging against each other. One nuzzled its head against her palm, as if it were sniffing her. Was it curiosity I sensed in them, or hunger?
"They know me, these children. Like calls to like."
"Stop this,"
demanded the Darkling. Bagra's palms began to fill with darkness. The sight was jarring. I'd only ever seen her summon once before. She had hidden her power away as I had once stifled mine, but she had done it for the sake of her son's secrets. I remembered what she'd said about Agrisha turning his power on himself. She shared the Darkling's blood, his power. Would she act against him now?
"I will not fight you," the Darkling said.
"Then strike me down,"
You know I won't.
She smiled then, and gave a little chuckle as if she were pleased with a precocious student.
It's true. That's why I still have hope.
Her head snapped to me.
Girl,
she said sharply. Her blind eyes were blank, but in that moment I could have sworn she saw me clearly.
Do not fail me again.
She isn't strong enough to fight me either, old woman.
Take up your stick, and I will return you to the little palace.
A terrible suspicion crept into me. Bagra had given me the strength to fight, but she'd never told me to do it. The only thing she'd ever asked of me was to run. Bagra, I began.
My hut, my fire. That sounds a pleasant thing, she said. But I find the dark is the same wherever I am.
You earned those eyes,
he said coldly, but I heard the hurt there, too.
I did, she said with a sigh. And more.
Then, without warning, she slammed her hands together. Thunder boomed over the mountain and darkness billowed from her palms like banners unfurling, twisting and curling around the Nichevoya. They shrieked and jittered, whirling in confusion.
Know that I loved you, she said to the darkling. Know that it was not enough.
In a single movement, she shoved herself up on the wall, and before I could draw breath to scream, she tipped forward and vanished over the ledge, trailing the Nichevoya behind her in tangled skeins of darkness. They tumbled past us in a rush, a shrieking black wave that rolled over the terrace and plummeted down, drawn by the power she exuded. No! The darkling roared. He dove after her, the wings of his soldiers beating with his fury. Alina, now! Through the haze of my horror, I heard Mal's words, felt him pushing me through the door, and suddenly Mal had Misha in his arms, and we were running through the observatory. Nichevoya screamed past us, yanked toward the terrace by Bagra's trailing skeins. Others simply hovered in confusion as their master drew farther away. Run, Bagra had told me again and again, and now I did. The heated floor was slippery with melted snow. The massive windows of the spinning wheel had been shattered, and flurries gusted through the room. I saw fallen bodies, pockets of fighting. I couldn't seem to think straight. Sergei, Nikolai, Bagra. Bagra! Falling through the mists, the rocks rising up to meet her. Would she cry out? Would she close her blind eyes? Little saint. Little martyr. Tolia was running toward us. I saw two opritchniki come at him, swords drawn. Without breaking stride, he threw out his fists, and the soldiers collapsed, clutching their chests, their mouths dripping blood. Where are the others? Mal shouted as we came level with Tolia and pelted for the staircase.
In the hangar, but they're outnumbered. We need to get down there.
Some of the darkling's blue-robed squalors had tried to blockade the stairs. They hurled crates and furniture at us in mighty gusts of wind. I slashed out with a cut, smashing the crates to kindling before they could reach us, sending the squalors scattering. The worst was waiting in the hangar below. All semblance of order had broken down in the panic to get away from the darkling's soldiers. People were swarming over the pelican and the ibis. The pelican already hovered above the hangar floor, borne aloft by squalor current. Soldiers were pulling on its cables, trying to drag it back down and climb aboard, unwilling to wait for the other barge. Someone gave the order, and the pelican surged free, plowing through the crowd as it took flight. It rose into the air, trailing screaming men like strange anchors, and disappeared from view. Zoya, Nadia, and Harshaw were backed up against one of the hulls of the Bittern, using fire and wind to try to keep back a crowd of Grisha and Opritchniki. Tamar was on the deck, and I was relieved to see Nevsky at her side, along with a few other soldiers from the 22nd. But behind them, Adric lay in a pool of blood. His arm hung from his body at a bizarre angle.
His face was white with shock. Jenya knelt over him, tears streaming down her face, as David stood above her with a rifle firing down at the attacking crowd with precarious aim. Stig was nowhere to be seen. Had he fled on the pelican or simply been left behind in the spinning wheel? "Stig," I said.
"There's no time,"
replied Mal. We shoved through the mob, and at a shouted order from her brother, Tamar slid into place and seized the bittern's wheel. We lay down cover as Zoya and the other squallers scrambled on deck. Mal stumbled as the bullet struck his thigh, but Harshaw had hold of him, dragging him aboard.
"Get us moving!" shouted Nevsky.
He signaled to the other soldiers, and they arrayed themselves along the hull's railing, opening fire on the Darkling's men. I took a place beside them, sending bright light up against the crowd, blinding them so they couldn't take aim. Mal and Tolia took their positions at the lines as Zoya filled the sails, but her power wasn't enough.
"Nadia, we need you!" bellowed Tamar.
Nadia looked up from where she'd knelt beside her brother. Her face was streaked with tears, but she rose to her feet, swaying, and forced a draft up into the sails. The bittern started to slide forward on its runners.
"They're too heavy!" Zoya cried.
Nevsky grabbed my shoulder.
"Survive,"
he said roughly.
"Help him."
Did he know what had happened to Nikolai?
"I will," I vowed. "The other barge."
He didn't stop to listen. Nevsky shouted,
"For the 22nd.
He vaulted over the side, and the other soldiers followed without hesitation. They threw themselves into the mob. Tamar called the order, and we shot from the hangar. The bittern plunged sickeningly from the ledge, then the sails snapped into place, and we were rising. I looked back and caught one last glimpse of Nevsky, rifle at his shoulder, before he was swallowed by the crowd. Chapter 12. We bobbed and faltered, the little craft swinging precariously back and forth beneath the sails, as Tamar and the crew tried to get control of the bittern. Snow lashed at our faces in stinging gusts, and when the hull nicked the side of a cliff, the whole deck tilted, sending us all scrambling for purchase. We had no tide makers to keep us cloaked in mist, so we could only hope that Bagra had bought us enough time to get clear of the mountains and the Darkling. Bagra. My eyes skittered over the deck. Misha had tucked himself against the side of the hull, his arms curled over his head. No one could stop to offer comfort. I knelt beside Adric and Jenya. Anichavoya had taken a massive bite from Adric's shoulder, and Jenya was trying to stop the bleeding, but she'd never been trained as a healer. His lips were pale, his skin ice cold, and as I watched, his eyes began to roll back in his head.
"Tolia!"
I shouted, trying not to sound panicked. Nadia turned, her eyes wide with terror, and the bittern dipped.
"Keep us steady, Nadia," Tamar demanded over the rush of wind. "Tolia, help him."
Harshaw came up behind Tolia. He had a deep gash in his forearm, but he gripped the ropes and said,
"Ready!"
I could see Onkat's shape squirming around in his coat. Tolia's brow was furrowed. Stig was meant to be with us. Harshaw hadn't been trained to work the lines.
"Just hold her steady,"
he cautioned Harshaw. He looked to where Mal stood, braced on the opposite side of the hull, hands tight to the ropes, muscles straining as we were buffeted by snow and wind.
"Do it!" Mal shouted.
He was bleeding from the bullet wound in his thigh. They made the switch. The bittern tilted, then righted itself as Harshaw let out a grunt.
"Got it!"
he grated through clenched teeth. It wasn't reassuring. Tolia leapt down to Adric's side and began working. Nadia was sobbing, but she held the draft steady.
"Can you save the arm?" I asked quietly.
Tolia shook his head once. He was a heartrender, a warrior and a killer, not a healer.
"I can't just seal the skin," he said, "or he'll bleed internally. I need to close the arteries. Can you warm him?"
I cast light over Adric, and his trembling calmed slightly.
We drove onward, sails taut with the force of Grisha wind. Tamar bent to the wheel, coat billowing behind her. I knew when we'd cleared the mountains because the bittern ceased its shaking. The air cut cold against my cheeks as we picked up speed, but I kept Adric cocooned in sunlight. Time seemed to slow. Neither of them wanted to say it, but I could see Nadia and Zoya beginning to tire. Mal and Harshaw couldn't be faring well either.
"We need to set down," I said.
"Where are we?"
Harshaw asked. His crest of red hair lay flat on his head, soaked through with snow. I thought of him as unpredictable, maybe a little dangerous, but here he was, bloody, tired, and working the lines for hours without complaint. Tamar consulted her charts.
"Just past the permafrost. If we keep heading south, we'll be above more populated areas soon."
"We could try to find woods for cover," panted Nadia.
"We're too near Chernost,"
Mal replied. Harshaw adjusted his grip.
"Does it matter? If we fly through today, we're going to be spotted."
"We could go higher," suggested Jenya.
Nadia shook her head.
"We can try, but the air's thinner up there, and we'll lose a lot of power on a vertical move."
"Where are we headed anyway?"
asked Zoya. Without thinking twice, I said, "To the copper mine at Murin. To the Firebird." There was a brief silence. Then Harshaw said what I knew a lot of them had to be thinking.
"We could run. Every time we face those monsters, more of us die. We could take this ship anywhere. Kerch, Novia Zem."
"Like hell," muttered Mal.
"This is my home," said Zoya. "I won't be chased out of it."
"What about Adric?"
Nadia asked, her voice hoarse.
"He lost a lot of blood,"
said Tolia.
"All I can do is keep his heart steady, try to give him time to recover."
"He needs a real healer."
"If the Darkling finds us, a healer won't do him any good," said Zoya.
I ran a hand over my eyes, trying to think. Adric might be stable, or he might slip more deeply into a coma and never come out of it. And if we sat down somewhere and were spotted, we'd all be in for death or worse. The Darkling must know we wouldn't land in Fierda, deep in enemy territory. He might think we'd flee to Westrovka. He'd send scouts everywhere he could. Would he stop to grieve for his mother? Dashed on the rocks, would there be enough of her left to bury? I looked over my shoulder, sure that at any minute I'd see Nichevoya swooping down on us. I couldn't think about Nikolai. I wouldn't. "We go to Murin," I said. "We'll figure out the rest from there. I won't force anyone to stay. Zoya, Nadia, can you get us there?" They'd been flagging before, but I needed to believe they had some reserve of strength to call on.
"I know I can,"
Zoya replied. Nadia's earnest chin lifted.
"Try to keep up."
"We can still be seen," I said. "We need a tide maker." David glanced up from bandaging the powder burns on his hand.
"What if you tried bending the light?"
I frowned.
"Bend it how?"
"The only reason anyone can see the ship is because light is bouncing off of it. Just eliminate the reflection."
"I'm not sure I follow."
"You don't say," said Jenya.
"Like a rock in a stream," David explained. "Just bend the light so it never actually hits the ship. There's nothing to see."
"So we'd be invisible?" Jenya asked.
"Theoretically."
She yanked off her boot and plunked it down on the deck.
"Try it."
I eyed the boot skeptically. I wasn't sure how to begin. This was a completely different way of using my power.
"Just bend the light?"
"Well," said David, it might help to remember that you don't have to concern yourself with the refractive index. You just need to redirect and synchronize both components of light simultaneously. I mean, you can't just start with the magnetic. That would be ridiculous.
I held up a hand.
Let's stick with the rock in the stream. I concentrated, but I didn't summon or hone the light the way I did with the cut. Instead, I just tried to give it a nudge. The toe of the boot grew blurry as the air near it seemed to waver. I tried to think of the light as water, as wind rushing around the leather, parting then slipping back together as if the boot had never been there. I cupped my fingers. The boot flickered and vanished. Jenya whooped. I shrieked and threw my hands in the air. The boot reappeared. I curled my fingers, and it was gone.
David, have I ever told you you're a genius?
Yes.
I'm telling you again.
Because the ship was larger and in motion, keeping the curve of light around it was more of a challenge. But I only had to worry about the light reflecting off the bottom of the hull, and after a few tries, I felt comfortable keeping the bend steady. If anyone happened to be standing in a field peering straight up, they might see something off, a blur or a flash of light, but they wouldn't see a winged ship moving through the afternoon sky. At least that was the hope.
It reminded me of something I'd once seen the Darkling do when he'd pulled me through a candlelit ballroom, using his power to render us nearly invisible, yet another trick he'd mastered long before I had.
Jenya dug through the provisions and found a stash of Jurda, the Zemini stimulant that soldiers sometimes used on long watches. It made me feel jittery and a little nauseated, but there was no other way to keep us on our feet and focused. It had to be chewed, and soon we were all spitting the rust-colored juice over the side.
"If this stains my teeth orange," said Zoya.
"It will," interrupted Jenya. "But I promise to put your teeth back whiter than they were before. I may even fix those weird incisors of yours."
"There's nothing wrong with my teeth."
"Not at all," said Jenya soothingly. "You're the prettiest walrus I know. I'm just amazed you haven't sawed through your lower lip."
"Keep your hands off me, Taylor," Zoya grumbled, "or I'll poke your other eye out."
By the time dusk came, Zoya didn't have the energy to bicker. She and Nadia were entirely focused on keeping us aloft. David was able to take over the wheel for brief periods of time so Tamar could see to the wound on Mal's leg. Harshaw, Tolya, and Mal alternated on the lines to give each other a chance to stretch. Only Nadia and Zoya had no relief as they toiled beneath a crescent moon. Though we tried to find ways to help, Jenya stood with her back to Nadia's, bracing her so she could rest her knees and feet a bit. Now that the sun had set, we had no need for cover, so for the better part of an hour, I buttressed Zoya's arms while she summoned.
"This is ridiculous," she growled,
her muscles shaking beneath my palms.
"Do you want me to let go? If you do, I'll cover you in Jurda juice."
I was eager to have something to do. The ship was too quiet, and I could feel the day's nightmares waiting to crowd in on me. Misha hadn't budged from his spot, curled into the hull. He was clutching the wooden practice sword that Mal had found for him. My throat tightened as I realized he'd brought it with him on the terrace when Bagra made him escort her to the Nichevoya. I fished a piece of hardtack out of the provisions and took it to him. "Hungry?" I asked. He shook his head. "Will you try to eat something anyway?" Another head shake. I sat beside him, unsure of what to say. I remembered sitting like this with Sergei in the tank room, searching for words of comfort and failing. Had he been scheming then, manipulating me? His fear had certainly seemed real. But Misha didn't just remind me of Sergei. He was every child whose parents went to war. He was every boy and girl at Keremsin. He was Bagra, begging for her father's attention. He was the Darkling learning loneliness at his mother's knee.
This was what Ravka did. It made orphans. It made misery. No land, no life, just a uniform and a gun. Nikolai had believed in something better. I took a shaky breath. I had to find a way to shut down my mind. If I thought of Nikolai, I would fall apart. Or Bagra, or the broken pieces of Sergei's body. Or Stieg left behind, or even the Darkling. The look on his face as his mother had disappeared beneath the clouds. How could he be so cruel and still so human? The night wore on as the sleeping Ravka passed beneath us. I counted stars. I watched over Adric. I dozed. I moved among the crew, offering sips of water and tufts of dried gerda blossoms. When anyone asked about Nikolai or Bagra, I gave them the facts of the battle in the briefest possible terms. I willed my mind to silence, tried to make it a blank field, white with snow, unmarred by tracks. Sometime around sunrise, I took my place at the railing and began shifting the light to camouflage the ship. That was when Adric muttered in his sleep. Nadia's head whipped around. The bittern bobbed. "Focus!" snapped Zoya. But she was smiling. We all were, ready to cling to the barest scrap of hope. We flew through the rest of the day and long into the next night. It was dawn on the second morning when we finally glimpsed the Sikorzoi. At midday, we spotted the deep, jagged crater that marked the abandoned copper mine where Nikolai had suggested we stash the bittern, a murky turquoise pool at its center. The descent was slow and tricky, and as soon as the hull scraped the crater floor, both Nadia and Zoya crumpled to the deck. They had pushed the limits of their power, and though their skin was flushed and glowing, they were completely exhausted. Tugging on the ropes, the rest of us managed to get the bittern out of sight beneath a ledge of rock. Anyone who climbed down into the mine would find it easily enough. But it was hard to imagine who would bother. The crater floor was littered with rusty machinery. An unpleasant smell came from the stagnant pool, and David said the water's opaque turquoise color came from minerals leaching out of the rock. There were no signs of squatters. While Mal and Harshaw secured the sails, Tolya carried Adric from the bittern. There was blood seeping from the stump where his arm had been, but he was fairly lucid and even drank a few sips of water. Misha refused to budge from the hull. I tucked a blanket over his shoulders and left him with a piece of hardtack and a slice of dried apple, hoping he would eat. We helped Zoya and Nadia off the ship, dragged our bedrolls into a nest beneath the shade of the overhang, and without another word fell into troubled sleep. We posted no watch. If we'd been followed, we had no fight left to give. As my eyes slid shut, I glimpsed Tolya sneaking back into the bittern and forced myself to sit up again. He emerged a moment later with a tightly wrapped bundle. His gaze darted to Adric, and my stomach dropped as I realized what he was carrying. I let my weary eyes close. I didn't want to know where Tolya planned to bury Adric's arm. When I woke, it was late afternoon. Most of the others were still sleeping soundly. Jenny was pinning up Adric's sleeve. I found Mal coming down the road that led around the side of the crater, carrying a bag full of grouse.
"I thought we'd stay tonight," he said, "and make a fire. We can leave for Dvostolba in the morning."
"All right," I said, though I was eager to get moving. He must have sensed it because he said,
"Adric could use the rest. We all could. I'm afraid if we keep pushing, one of them will break."
I nodded. He was right. We were all grieving and frightened and tired. "I'll bring some kindling down." He touched my arm.
"Alina, I won't be long."
I pushed past him.
I didn't want to talk. I didn't want words of comfort. I wanted the Firebird. I wanted to turn my pain into anger and bring it to the Darkling's door.
I made my way up to the woods that surrounded the mine. This far south, the trees were different. taller and more sparse, their bark red and porous. I was on my way back to the mine, my arms full of the driest branches I could find, when I got the eerie feeling I was being watched. I stopped, the hair rising on the back of my neck. I peered between the sunlit trunks, waiting. The silence was dense, as if every small creature were holding its breath. Then I heard it, a soft rustling. My head jerked up, following the sound into the trees. My eyes fastened on a flicker of movement, the silent beat of a shadowy wing. Nikolai was perched in the branches of a tree, his dark gaze fastened on me. His chest was bare and lined in black, as if darkness had shattered beneath his skin. He'd lost his boots somewhere, and his bare feet gripped the bark. His toes had become black talons. He had dried blood on his hands and near his mouth. "Nikolai," I whispered. He flinched back. "Nikolai, wait!" But he leapt into the air, dark wings shaking the branches as he broke through them to the blue sky beyond. I wanted to scream, so I did. I tossed my kindling to the ground, pressed my fist to my mouth, and screamed until my throat was raw. I couldn't stop. I'd managed not to weep on the bittern or at the mine, but now I sank to the forest floor, my screams turning to sobs, silent, racking gasps. They hurt, as if they might crack my ribs open, but emerged soundless from my lips. I kept thinking of Nikolai's torn trousers and had the foolish thought that he'd be mortified to see his clothes in such a state. He'd followed us all the way from the spinning wheel. Could he tell the Darkling of our whereabouts? Would he? How much of him was left inside that tortured body? I felt it then. The vibration along that invisible tether. I pushed away from it. I would not go to the Darkling now. I wouldn't go to him ever again. But still, I knew wherever he was grieving. Mal found me there, head buried in my arms, coat covered in green needles. He offered me his hand, but I ignored it. "I'm all right," I said, though nothing could have been less true.
"It's getting dark. You shouldn't be out here alone."
"I am the Sun Summoner. It gets dark when I say it does." He crouched down in front of me and waited for me to meet his eyes.
"Don't shut them out, Elena. They need to grieve with you."
"I don't have anything to say."
"Then let them talk."
I had no solace or encouragement to offer. I didn't want to share this hurt. I didn't want them to see how frightened I was. But I made myself get up and brush the needles from my coat. I let Mal lead me back to the mine. By the time we got all the way down to the crater floor, it was full dark and the others had lit lanterns beneath the overhang.
"Took your time, didn't you?" said Zoya. "Did we have to freeze while you two frolicked around in the woods?"
There was no point to hiding my tear-stained face, so I just said, "Turned out I needed a good cry." I braced myself for an insult, but all she said was,
"Next time, invite me. I could use one, too."
Mal dropped the kindling I'd gathered into the fire pit someone had made, and I plucked Onkot from Harshaw's shoulder. She gave a brief hiss, but I didn't care. Right now, I needed to cuddle something soft and furry. They'd already cleaned and spitted the game Mal had caught, and soon, despite my sadness and worry, the smell of roasting meat had my mouth watering. We sat around the fire, eating and passing around a flask of kvass, watching the flames play over the hull of the bittern as the branches crackled and popped. We had a lot to talk about. Who would go with us into the Sikorzoi, and who would remain in the valley, whether or not people even wanted to stay. I rubbed my wrist. It helped to focus on the firebird, to think of that instead of the black sheen of Nikolai's eyes, the dark crust of blood near his lips.
Abruptly, Zoya said, "I should have known Sergei couldn't be trusted. He was always a weakling."
That seemed unfair, but I let it pass.
"Onkat never liked him,"
Harshaw added.